Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast with me, Matt Beadle, and the reflective voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
I will be today.
You will be, because that's what we shall be today, mate. Reflective.
I'm looking forward to this one.
Good, for this is the last in the current crop of podcasts that you and I initially set out to produce since we started this little venture of ours some 8 months ago or so, I believe it was.
Yeah, no, good timing. Obviously, we're going to have a very, very short break, and of course, we'll then be back fresh, ready for the new season. But a bit of a reflective episode today.
Can't believe it's been that long already, to be fair. From Dibble and Steele to Heaton, Hart and Butland. Beyond, mate, some decent names in there.
Do you know what? I've been delighted with those that have taken part. I'm sure we're going to go into a bit of detail on several of them. But no, I've been delighted with the guests we've had on so far. The plan is, of course, to have even more of the same calibre going into next season. It's been great. I think, you know, the whole idea of actually creating something where goalkeepers can listen to those that are at the very top of their game and try and take something from it, little nuggets of wisdom that hopefully our listeners have gained along the way.
Nuggets, mate, nuggets, absolutely. And of course, you do provide that wisdom. I was going to ask you how you thought it's gone, but you've already answered that. So I'm going to put this out to the listeners and ask the listeners who are listening right now how you think it's gone. Have you enjoyed it? Anything you'd like us to add, to change, or to think about? And on that note, to be fair, I also want to thank the listeners for doing just that, for listening. Because we started this on a whim, really, you and I. We knew there was a market out there, and we knew, obviously, that the Goalkeepers Union did indeed exist. But I don't know about you, mate. I've personally been blown away by the feedback we've received up to this point. I mean, the emails, the interaction on Twitter, ultimately the goalkeeping discussion that we sparked as a result of this podcast.
But of course, we're always looking to grow ourselves. So we're always looking for feedback. The emails we've received are always greatly received, because we do want to improve this and make it the very best show that it can possibly be.
Yeah, so thank you for that, and please do continue to send us emails and tweets, and also please do leave iTunes reviews. Reviews really do help to ramp up the awareness of the podcast and also bring in the occasional spot of handy revenue in order to further the venture and make this a better product for everyone involved. So yes, iTunes reviews, please. Twitter at GK Union, email hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Okay, well, back to you, Rich. And with this, I'd actually like to go back to our very first pilot pod. Two blokes and a microphone, really, warbling about goalkeeping in the hope that people might respond. So let's just reiterate your main reasons for starting this podcast and why you feel a closer look at goalkeepers was required.
For me, I just think that over the period of time, and certainly over the last few seasons, in fact, pretty much since I remember playing in goal, I would listen to pundits giving their thoughts on goalkeepers. Now, when I was younger and didn't know too much about goalkeeping, I would take it as it was and I would accept it. But I think then what happens, and it's happened to most goalkeepers, is you get that little bit older, you understand the game that little bit more, and you start to realise that what you're hearing isn't necessarily true. And I don't know about a lot of the guys listening in, but I get the impression that many are of a similar mindset, where you'll watch games and you'll be frustrated because certain things aren't being given the credit and the praise they deserve. The little intricacies of goalkeeping that are so important to being a top-class goalkeeper will go unnoticed, and yet things are being touched upon, either positively or negatively, that aren't particularly difficult or aren't particularly correct. And one of the ideas with this was actually creating a space where we can speak to some of those that have gone to the very top of their game and try and dig into their psyche a little bit. What is it that makes them tick? What are their thoughts on goalkeeping at the moment? Where do they see goalkeeping going? What are the next step for goalkeepers? And actually, it's been fascinating. You know, we must be, 25, 30 guests in now.
29,
there you go. And you think of some of the stories we've heard along the way. And actually, one of the things that really struck me was the amount of similarities with each one. You know, we always try and keep the podcast interesting. We'll touch a lot on their stories, but naturally we'll try and dig in to find out what it is that makes them tick and what's really of interest to them. And so many times I've seen a common thread between pretty much every goalkeeper coach, and a certain mentality, a certain mindset. And I know from some of the feedback we've received how people have fed off that. And look, I know how important it is. You know, I know certainly when I was having some tough times in goalkeeping, I'd look outside to try and find that inspiration, motivation and education as to how I could improve my mindset to allow me the chance to play at the top of my game. So actually having the ability to tap into the mindset of some brilliant goalkeepers, some brilliant goalkeeper coaches, will allow goalkeepers to find that next level. Because one of the key things, it's very difficult to find it yourself. If you haven't got something to feed off, if you haven't got that world-class coach, if you haven't got world-class goalkeeping people around you to do that, it can be very difficult to find your next level. So hopefully we've been able to provide some of that so far. And it has very much only been the start for us. As I mentioned, this is very much the first season. Hopefully we're still talking to you in 4, 5, 6 years to come, and we'll have had hundreds of guests on by that point.
Let's hope so. And I did mention the iTunes reviews. We had one that I feel kind of encapsulates everything with regards to why we did this. And it's from a DMV82. And he said, or she said, "To be honest, I didn't even realise this aspect of football analysis was missing from mainstream media until I listened to this podcast." So that's essentially why we've done this, right?
That's the whole point. I just think that, and like I say, it's good and bad. It's not a case of, and I know I've received a bit of stick for this, where a lot of outfield pundits may just think it's all goalkeepers getting together and moaning about what's going on. It's not, because actually sometimes it'll be, I'll see something in a game that might be negative but no one picks up on it, or I might see a save, for instance, that's not particularly difficult, but they get huge credit on TV because they don't fully understand goalkeeping. Or of course it'll be the classic cliches that we touch on all the time: beating at his near post, good height for a keeper, flaps at crosses, all the nonsense that we hear. And it's just frustrating because effectively it is a different sport, and I know we've made this point several times, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it is a different sport within a sport. So we're watching it with very different eyes to what a lot of the outfield players will, and that's absolutely fine. But of course, if we're going to be critiqued, you want to be critiqued by people that understand what it is that you're going through, people that have stood between the sticks, that have felt the pressure that you feel, that have had the highs, have had the lows, have been at fault for a 1-0 defeat and have felt that feeling. And it's hard to describe, where you're walking off the pitch and you know you were the reason they lost today. That's a tough feeling to deal with. And actually then to understand how you can bounce back mentally, how you can maximise what it is you do technically, tactically, physically, nutritionally, all these different areas of goalkeeping that are so, so important to maximising your potential.
And that's quite poignant. You mentioned pundits there, and it is key to get across that we're not trying to dig out outfield pundits, were just raising awareness as to where they might be slightly inaccurate. And I think one of the key things here is that we've been talking about this for a good 2 years prior to actually going ahead, right? And for a whole multitude of reasons, it wasn't the right time for either of us. And then we basically just decided around this time last year, I suppose, to bin off those factors and go ahead with it. And I think the turning point was England's first clash with Belgium in the World Cup last summer, when Jordan Pickford conceded from Adnan Januzaj, and Lee Dixon made that infamous comment, shall we say, that his mate down the pub had texted him and said that Pickford should have gone with the other hand. And Twitter erupted, and obviously you erupted, and blogs ensued, and podcast essentially started from that.
Yeah, you're right. Also think, you know, here's one of the classic cliches: everything happens for a reason. But I think certain things then fell into place. So we'll give a bit of a shout out to Love Sport, who allow us to use the studio here in central London, which is a fantastic studio to then present and create this podcast. And even that, the fact that this then fell into place in the way that it did, and it gave us a platform in order to create the podcast. And it was, I think it was just a case of almost one step too far, one too many things that had happened, where all of a sudden it was like, right, we've been talking about doing this for a long time. We know that it will be popular. We know there's a lot of other people that feel a very similar way. So that now's the time to do this. I mean, I had the realization. So when I wrote my book, Graduation, which was back in 2010-11, I was quite nervous when I put that out.
We're going to get onto that, by the way, in another podcast. We're going to kind of review that book, because that was a turning point for you in your career.
It was. But do you know the key thing for me was, and that sold, I think it sold several thousand copies in the end. So not like hundreds of thousands, but the key thing was the amount of professional goalkeepers that got in touch with me, people I didn't know, that just said, oh, do you know what, I felt exactly that. I went into some depths really about certainly how nervous I got, and sometimes you hate yourself when things aren't going your way. And I was quite honest in the book, and I was a little bit worried putting it out there, because, you know, people can then position you and picture you a certain way. But it was the fact that some really high profile goalkeepers got in touch and were like, look, I'm so glad you put that out there, because I feel so similar and have felt so similar, the same kind of doubts, same kind of insecurities that you have as a goalkeeper. So I think now, and certainly with mental health being as big as it is now in football in general, and people talking about it a bit more, realizing that actually, if you can feed off some of the very best that are out there, if you can alter one or two bits, it might just give you that extra 1%, that extra 2%, which might be the difference between you keeping a clean sheet at the weekend or conceding one. You just don't know.
And I think the moment, just to finish this little segment off, that we knew we'd arrived was your Twitter spat with Gary Neville, which I think is one of my highlights of the past 12 months, because it was in the World Cup, a game, Denmark, I believe Kasper Schmeichel punched the ball, and you took exception to his comments, he took exception to your comments, and then a mini argument, shall we say, continued with him basically using the fact that he played with Peter Schmeichel and Edwin van der Sar as a substantial reason for him to have an opinion on what goalkeepers should do. And you disagreed with that. And it was a bit of fun, a bit of back and forth.
Well, it was interesting. Yeah, no, around that time, and I remember a few tweets we put out that got thousands of likes and other. And it was, you're right, it was good fun. And it was the fact that, and that was a classic comment, like, I have played with, yeah, van der Sar, Schmeichel, et cetera, therefore I know goalkeeping. Well, do you know, I've played with some pretty good players as well, but I don't claim to know everything about being a striker, midfielder, fullback. Now, look, I'm not saying that we need a pundit for every position on the field, but of course, Gary Neville's going to have really intense, credible knowledge about certain areas on the field, but he's not perfect. I mean, his stint as Valencia manager, you could argue, showed that actually when he did put himself on the line, it didn't work out. Now, for him then to put himself in the shoes of a goalkeeper and try and give goalkeeping analysis, yes, we're all welcome to our opinions. That's absolutely fine. But when the expert opinion, and for a time, I think it's faded now, but for a time, people were looking to Gary Neville for goalkeeping opinion, which is absolutely ludicrous. In other countries, that isn't the case. There are goalkeeping pundits in other countries. Brad Friedel does a lot in America. I know he's been manager of a club over there, so not so much now. But you know, Brad Friedel gives quality opinion. In other countries, you've got the same thing where you've got ex-goalkeepers, ex-international goalkeepers giving opinion. Now, unfortunately, we don't really have that here. You know, bits and pieces go on, and we have got a few goalkeepers starting to get out there. I see Paul Robinson doing a bit more, which is great. Of course, one of our guests, which was good. Matt Murray does the odd bit here and there, although that's more general. I'm just hoping that over the next few years, like we've seen with referees, like we've seen in other areas, there is a bit more specific quality analysis. Now, I know it's quite niche, and I know that there'll always be an argument against it because it's only 1/11th of the team, but actually just for those key moments when we're being given poor analysis, the difficulty for me and the worry for me is that it impacts further down. You imagine if you're a kid and you're watching Jordan Pickford against Belgium, and by the way, how it turned around for him, because you're watching Jordan Pickford against Belgium and the negativity he received after what was an okay performance, wasn't dreadful, a couple of parries that weren't quite into the right area, and suddenly he's getting slammed by these pundits. You imagine being a kid. Do you want to play in goal? Of course you don't. Absolutely no interest. Now, thankfully, Jordan Pickford turns it around by then saving a penalty, and all of a sudden he's a hero. Just proves the point of how fickle we and pundits can be, where a bad parry and he's getting all sorts of abuse suddenly saves a penalty and he's an absolute hero. Now, level-headed goalkeeping pundits are looking at both of those incidences in very different ways, and I just think that hopefully via some of the analysis that we are starting to put out there, and even more so that we will put out, we can start to educate people that little bit more and make people understand that goalkeeping, look, yes, I'm biased, but it is a fantastic position for a young goalkeeper taking into the sport and taking up goalkeeping. For me, the enjoyment factor is huge. Throwing yourself around in the mud, learning all the different techniques you need to learn, making those great saves, understanding the small parts of the game that make up a good goalkeeper. For me, it's critical. And I think the more that we can make goalkeeping cool again, for want of a better phrase, which it is. It's what we need to do. Like, it cool, hasn't been cool, for a long man. Time. No, but we need to make it something that people want to do again. And I just feel for a long period of time that hasn't been the case, which is why we've seen so many foreign goalkeepers become the pin-up stars in the goalkeeping world.
Okay, well, we're also at the end of a season where a world record fee for a goalkeeper was broken twice in the space of a month, with Alisson, of course, first moving to Liverpool, and then Kepa joining Chelsea from Athletic Bilbao. A season prior, we'd obviously seen Jordan Pickford and Ederson sign for Everton and Man City, respectively, for around, I don't know, 30 million, 35 million, which was some 16 years after we'd seen the record broken for Gigi Buffon, who obviously went from Parma to Juve in 2001. Now, look, this has been discussed at length throughout the media over the past 12 months, and I guess we're preaching to the converted when we talk about goalkeepers being as valuable as outfield players here, but how have you seen it pan out? How have you seen those particular goalkeepers in question, Alisson and Kepa, and the impact they've had on Liverpool and Chelsea pan out this season?
I mean, look, Alisson, there's very little to be said. Look, it was that perfect moment, and there's a lot that went out. Obviously, the Champions League, you had the 12 months, the difference that 12 months makes, and that signing for me, of course, Van Dijk, don't get me wrong, huge, but that signing for me where Karius, look, Karius is a decent keeper, but we saw the issues 12 months ago where it was just that the stage was that little bit too big for him. Now, they then went out and they prioritised that as what they needed to do, and they found Alisson, who been phenomenal. He has. Phenomenal in the fact that, not in terms of making fantastic saves, loads and loads of great saves. In fact, if you think back throughout the season, there's very few world-class saves that you'll think of. However, the ones that he made at critical times. The save against Napoli, of course, was well highlighted. The saves that he made towards the end of the game in the Champions League final, under pressure, again, highlighted. Several others at key times. So it's having the goalkeeper that has the concentration levels to play in a team like Liverpool, who... you're going to have the ball for a large period of the time. You're not going to have a great deal to do, but when you are called upon, you need to make sure you're ready. Similarly, you need to keep possession of the football because you're going to be building attack after attack. Now, what they've got in Alisson is somebody that has the ability to keep the football. When it comes to distribution, of course, he's as good as anyone. Well, as good as anyone, maybe, except for Edison, who we'll touch on in a minute. Mm-hmm. But you have got somebody who's able to keep possession of the football, positive in decision-making, a big character, good concentration levels, and when it matters, he's able to keep his cool, which he did several times over the season in key games, which in the end led to them, in my opinion, becoming European champions. If they didn't have Alisson in goal, I don't think they win the European Cup. It's as simple as that. So that, for me, that you talk about value for money, they've absolutely got that in abundance. For me, and I am biased, that was their best signing of last summer.
And you mentioned the Champions League there, and they might not have won the Champions League. Of course, that was that great save towards the end of the game against Napoli, which got them out of the group. But what's ironic about that, and it's what you've discussed already, is that it wasn't a great save. It was a good save. Mm. But it was blown up to be such a great save because of its importance.
And that is key. And look, at the time, it was, I remember we did a piece on it at the time, where it's, if you were to break that down, if you make that save when you're 3-0 down in the last minute of a game, no one cares. But actually, there is something to that. It's, can you keep your cool in those moments? Because if you make a great save in those moments, they're the saves that get remembered. You know, I can give you a handful of great saves that I made when we lost, and no one cares. It gets forgotten about that evening, you know. But you make it in a key moment. You make it in the last minute of a game when you're 1-0 up and it means your team win victory. You watch them all run to you at the end of the game. That happens. So that's where I give massive credit to Alisson. Because, by the way, he hasn't been faultless this season. There have been mistakes. From memory, I think one against United, one against Leicester in particular with his feet. So he's certainly not been faultless this season. But the times he did make mistakes, they often won. Mm. In fact, pretty much every time they won. So actually, they get forgotten very quickly as well. Now, not all of us have the luxury to be in a team like Liverpool and our mistakes get covered up. But I think when it came to the biggest moments, he was spot on. And I was, hugely, hugely impressed. And for me, one of the signings of the season.
Okay, and just quickly on Kepa. For me, he kind of came in and just seamlessly integrated into that Chelsea side where no one was really talking about him, which I guess is a good thing when you first come to the club as a young, very expensive 70-plus million goalkeeper. But he had quite an eventful season in the end, with obviously the penalties against Eintracht Frankfurt, which were huge in getting Chelsea to the Europa League final, but also the dark side of goalkeeping, shall we say, in the Carabao Cup final with Man City.
Yeah, look, Kepa was never a signing for this season, in my opinion. You know, very, very young, a lot of talent, a lot of ability. I've really enjoyed watching him play. Some of the saves he's pulled off have been fantastic. Very Spanish in a lot of his ways. You know, I certainly see similarities to De Gea and other goalkeepers that have come from Spain. You know, I love the physique, tall, slim, good spring, quick feet, very, very athletic, very flexible. Certain areas I think he can certainly strengthen, and I think he will. I think aerially there's still more to come from him.
He does these ski arms as well that people say. Yeah. We've seen this with Ter Stegen as well, to be fair, where the attacker is striking the ball, and as they're striking, because he's trying to, I mean, obviously you'll elaborate, he's trying to generate power, his arms come behind him like you'd imagine a skier to do as they're about to jump off, which can sometimes be a hindrance, right?
Yeah, it's getting the balance, because if you don't swing your arms at all, you're going to struggle to get power, because then you're solely reliant on your core and on your legs in order to generate the power. So you need a little bit of arm movement. It's like if someone were to ask you to jump in the air from a standing position, you notice you would move your arms quite a lot in order to jump up into the air. Now, similarly, you have the same thing when you're diving for a football. The more that you swing your arms, of course, the harder it is to get the hand-eye coordination and connect with the football in the right place. We were talking, actually, as of recording, the goal that went in against Holland, Cillessen, similarities to an extent, where if you don't quite connect with the ball
this
in the right
Guedes
place...
This is Guedes in the final for Portugal.
Yes, that's right. So if you don't quite then connect with the ball in the right place, you only have to mistime it by a centimetre, an inch, and it will go in. It will go through your hands. You won't get the parry that you want to get. We've seen that a few times with Kepa this season, a couple of times in particular where it was costly. Now, look, that's something that I think over time we'll start to see slightly less arm movement, I think. And I think he can still do a little bit less and still generate the power that he does. But yeah, that has been a part of his game. But again, at the same time, I'm trying to think of the save he made, top hand in the top corner that was replayed hundreds of times. It'll come back to me in a minute. But that was an example where, had he not swung the arms quite so much, he wouldn't have generated the power to get himself up in the top corner in the manner that he did. So it's give and take, really. But of course, when it doesn't work out, that's when a pundit will look at it and say, oh, do you know what? You could have done better with that.
Right, speaking of those two goalkeepers in particular, I'd like to get your top stoppers for the season. Highlights, heroes, howlers, although we can't use howlers because Chris Kirkland made it abundantly clear.
Absolutely.
That he does not like that word to be used when describing a goalkeeping misdemeanour. Sorry, Chris. But yes, what sticks out for you this season? Top performances, breakthroughs, key moments in any league here, by the way, not just the Prem, not even England. In fact, we can allude to Manuel Neuer's trickery in the corner flag against Belarus recently in the European Championship qualifiers.
Yeah, well, look, some honourable mentions, I think. And by the way, some of these guys that have come on the podcast, which is, you know, fantastic for us. Neil Etheridge being a great example, you know, came on this podcast. Who would have seen him have the season that he ended up having? And again, as of recording, all sorts of clubs apparently interested. He's being linked here, there and everywhere for a return back to the Premier League. And I think for him, and where I'm so pleased for him, was the fact that coming into the season, he wasn't even guaranteed to be number one at Cardiff. You know, 2-3 years ago, he's playing for Walsall in League One on not a lot of money as a wage. And all of a sudden, it just shows you how quickly things can change in the world of football, in the world of goalkeeping. And I think in terms of a motivational, inspirational story for a lot of goalkeepers out there, Neil Etheridge is as inspirational as any. He was actually seconds away from flying back to the Philippines from the sounds of things. And it was only then a reprieve from Oldham, where he went as third choice, that he ended up staying in the UK. So, I mean, look, if you haven't listened to that podcast, I'd certainly recommend listening to that one. Mention for Tom Heaton, again, another lad that's come on the podcast. Brilliant season. Bearing in mind that he came back from injury, I doubted, especially given how well Joe Hart started the season, someone else who came on the podcast. We're not just choosing the people that came on the podcast. I was going to say, this is just a message to all Premier League goalkeepers. If you want to mention on here, you just got to come on here and then we'll give you preferential treatment. But no, genuinely, and the fact that Nick Pope was going to come back at some point, I actually thought Tom Heaton be the one that would make way. But credit to him for not only getting himself back in the team, but his record when he was in the team really showed his leadership skills and helped Burnley stay in the league.
What's incredible about that season, or the last season just gone for Burnley, is that I'm pretty sure it was half and half, split right down the middle.
Yeah.
Joe Hart played those first 19 games of the season. Tom Heaton came in, played the next 19 games of the season. It's like perfect. If you could talk about a season of two halves for Burnley, that is it right there.
Yeah. And look, whether it's harsh or not on Joe, when Tom did come in the team, their record was very, very good. And going into next season, they'll fancy themselves to be top half again if they can start the season the way they finished the season. I think that huge credit has to go to Tom for that. Never easy to come back. It was a shoulder injury. And I know personally, it's never easy to come back from a shoulder injury. But he looks stronger than ever, hungrier than ever. Some of the saves he pulled off are fantastic. And I just think a really inspirational character to come back in the Burnley team. And it made a huge difference. So certainly a mention to him.
Okay, well, that's the Prem. I did say you could do all of the leagues here, so let's look at the Championship, League One, League Two.
Yeah, a couple from League One, and I'll mention these partly because I know them and I talk to them and really impressed with what they've done this season. Firstly, Adam Davis, Barnsley, ended up making his Wales debut, which I'm delighted for him for. Bearing in mind that 12 months ago, he'd lost his place at Barnsley, getting relegated from the Championship. He was number two to a young lad, Walton, a 19-year-old there. And going into this season, it wasn't even sure that he would start. Not only did he start, he ended up getting captaincy at Barnsley, made his debut for Wales. They ended up getting promotion. He got in the EFL Team of the Year, obviously the League One Team of the Year as well. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal season. So big mention for Adam Davis. Similarly, Dylan Phillips at Charlton. First half of the season, couldn't get his way into the Charlton team. Jed Steer on loan from Aston Villa, who ended up, of course, getting promotion for both Charlton and Aston Villa. Incredible achievement from Jed. But Dylan finally fought his way in January, kept his place, and was exceptional. And the biggest thing for me, and those that would have seen it, the League One final, talk about having your worst moment in football in your biggest game. You know, 5 minutes into that game, makes a big error that costs them the goal. But then for those that saw the game, after that, he was absolutely faultless for the remainder of the game. And of course, Charlton getting the last minute winner. And for Dylan, just a massive life lesson, life experience, goalkeeping lesson, goalkeeping experience. And I just think him going into the Championship, still only 23 years old, I'm really excited to see how he does with Charlton next season, because he's certainly put in the hard yards and he is ready now for a run in the Championship. In terms of other notable mentions in the championship itself, Tim Krul, a lot of people thought he was done, but for him to do as well as he's done for Norwich and gain promotion, huge well done to him. A massive well done to Dean Henderson, who two seasons in a row now for Shrewsbury, of course, made the League One final, very close to getting promotion for them, and of course has got promotion for Sheffield United. A real big name to look forward to and to look at in the future. I'm sure he'll do very well. We touched on Jed Steer, the fact that he went back to Villa, forced his way into the team, got promotion with them. Jack Butland, who played in the Championship, of course, wouldn't have wanted that after he's still involved in England squads, but played very well for Stoke, I thought, last season. Certainly impressed and increased and grew as the season went on. I've got no doubt that we'll see him back in the Premier League sometime soon too.
I've got another one that you haven't mentioned.
Go on.
Dean Brill at Leyton Orient, because this is a really interesting story, this one, in the sense that he was filling about in Scotland for Inverness, Caledonia Thistle and Motherwell and didn't play for quite a while, then came back to England and didn't play for Colchester United. Looked like his career had basically fallen by the wayside, his playing career, so he went to Leyton Orient as a goalkeeping coach and has played a massive part as a player in helping them get back into the Football League.
Yeah, he really has. And you're right, he did. He went as a goalkeeping coach, solely as a goalkeeping coach. And obviously his opportunity came up and he's very much taken it. And I think there's something about that. And this is where, when we talk about the different strengths you need to be a goalkeeper, it's very easy to see the fantastic athletic save in the top corner and think, wow, that's goalkeeping. Truth is, it isn't. There's a reason that not so long ago it was the older, experienced goalkeepers that every manager wanted. Because to have that character behind the defence, that experience behind the defence that's able to dictate, able to guide, knows the game inside out tactically, able to read the game, able to understand what's likely to happen, plays the percentages, that can go a long way. And you might not necessarily, look, he still makes good saves and he's still in good shape, but it might not be that you're necessarily making those incredible saves anymore. But actually, you're able to stop so many goals at source because you understand the game of football. And I really make a big point on this to younger goalkeepers. Try not to get too caught up in always working on the great save. Actually, you can do yourself a favour by just knowing the game inside out, study the game, understand it tactically, not just your job, but the job of those around you as well, so you can start to read that game even more. And I think Dean Brill's a perfect example of that.
Sure, and he actually came out this week because, as of the week of recording, the tragic news came out that Justin Edinburgh passed away, his manager. And he put a tweet out, which was lovely, and just said, look, you believed in me when others didn't, and you've given me another shot at playing, and he'll be forever thankful for that.
Yeah, he will. No, I think that, you know, and Dean Brill's kind of summed it up perfectly there. You know, so many tributes that have gone out to Justin Edinburgh. We obviously had ours here from the Goalkeepers Union. Yeah, horrible news. Couldn't believe it myself, to be honest. But, you know, everything that's come out has been hugely, hugely supportive. He's obviously left quite a legacy. No, and I'm sure Dean Brill and every Leyton Orient fan, every football fan, will be sending their best wishes to his family.
Right, next bit. We're rattling through this, by the way, mate, which is very good. And I now want to talk about the podcast as a whole and the guests that we've had and the episodes that we've done and what you think and what stands out, I suppose, of the guests that we've had so far.
Indeed. We'll stop right there, Matthew, because I've got a question for you.
Okay. This is a bit nervous.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions in, as you know. Now, I get some personally to my different social media and what have you. And I had one in particular from Danny Sandbridge, who I know a lot of our goalkeepers that listen actually know who he is. He runs his own group of goalkeepers and some very interesting content that goes in there. But he was actually asking for me to ask you the question as to what you've learned doing this podcast, because of course you've started doing this with me, but your background isn't in goalkeeping. You're very knowledgeable when it comes to football, but this has been a slightly different project for you, I would say.
It has been different. And by the way, this isn't about me. I appreciate the message, but it's obviously about you and your expert analysis and the multitude of stories that our guests bring to the show. I'm purely a conduit from which one flows to the other. But I will answer the question because I appreciate that. And I think, crikey, there's a whole load of things. I think the fact that goalkeeping is the loneliest job in football, and I know that's a cliche, but that's really struck out for me. And you can look at the things that Tom Heaton said about it being just a reactive position, that Kelvin Davis said, you know, you go, as soon as you go looking for a save, that's when you're gonna make an error. Brad Friedel, the quote that we always go back to, you're not as good as you are, not as bad as you think you are, it's always somewhere in between. And Ben Foster even saying that, let's not take it too seriously. Mistakes, by law of averages, you will make mistakes in a match, so don't let it affect you too much. Mm. And play football, be a goalkeeper with a smile, I suppose. Just have a laugh, is what he said.
Yeah, he did. That's a bit for me, and obviously I've had the pleasure of knowing Ben for a long time now, but he just simplifies the game so much, where ultimately he just goes out, tries his best. Some days it's good, some days it's not so good. But you understand that if you put the work in over the period of time and you keep looking to improve every single day, even the smallest thing, but keep improving, then of course the law of averages are that you're going to have more good games than bad. The thing I've noticed actually, because we have a lot of back and forth, obviously we're watching games of football and things are going on and you'll text me, you know, something's happening again. I've realized that as the season's gone on, I'm not even having to tell you stuff now. I think probably the amount we're talking and the amount that you're watching, you're picking up on certain things before I've even sent you a message about something that might have happened in a game.
Yeah, 100%. I think the fact that I now watch football completely differently. Mm. And listen, I was always interested in every aspect of a game, but I do look at it from a goalkeeper's perspective far more now than I used to. And it's quite interesting because I have debates while I'm watching games now and I'm very defensive of goalkeepers. You know, I also attack goalkeepers because I don't want to be one-sided with this. And there are things that you and I disagree with, actually. We'll come on to that in a bit, because there's other stuff that mindset is so huge. And the stuff that you've discussed on this podcast with the likes of, I mean, the one we did with Tom Heaton was incredible. Mm. And all the things that he talked about, Dean Kiley discussing how he adopted sports psychology way back when, before sports psychology was really known in the sport. And I talk about watching the game differently now. It actually really helped me during the recent game between England, the third place playoff between England and Switzerland, because it got to penalties. And I was watching Jordan Pickford like a hawk. And I was on radio at the time. And it really helped me speak about what he was doing. And the other guys that were on the show were like, oh, okay, we hadn't factored that in. The fact that, you know, Jordan Pickford would run to retrieve the ball to give England's takers their own control over their penalty prep. The fact that he was whacking the bar, that he was clapping, all the things that Jordan Pickford did, even when he struck his own penalty, the stance that we saw against Colombia in the World Cup, the big intake of breath and the puffing out of the chest, you know, his mental state was big. I think you and Frankie Fielding explaining about what you do during a match to keep yourself occupied. And we then went to watch Brighton at West Ham and David Button was in goal. And I was asking you various questions about that. Like, why is he doing this when the ball was completely at the other end of the pitch? But he was taking his water. He was moving about constantly to keep himself occupied. I think that's something that you don't factor in as a fan because goalkeepers can be so lonely there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've been really impressed. Well, we converted you. We just got a few more million to convert now. We'll get there.
I think the theory of play is moving on as well. Dean Kiley said, you know, he mentioned mercenary and ruthlessness, and we've talked about that a lot, and that then feeds into the sliding doors of David James coming in for him at Portsmouth, which he wasn't aware of, and he was disappointed at the time, but that inadvertently then led him to go to West Brom and have a great time there. The bonkers nature, Neil Etheridge, you talked about his career, but that bonkers career that you can get. Yeah. Andy Dibble, crikey, what a story that was. I mean, the fact that he went on loan to Rangers, and Brian Laudrup, he said, almost thought they'd got in a ringer, because the training session he just went on loan as an emergency cover. Emergency loans, by the way, is another thing for goalkeepers that just seems to, the loan market seems to be built purely for goalkeepers because they can have these emergency loans. It seems like loans are applicable more for goalkeepers, or goalkeepers utilise loans more. But Andy Dibble went on loan to Rangers, had a terrible training session. They thought, who on earth is this? He then goes and plays against Celtic in the Old Firm at the weekend. Rangers win the title as a result of him keeping a clean sheet, and he gets a tattoo of Rangers on, I mean, and then towards the end of his career, he's at Barrytown because he thought he was going to go to America. I'm sure you remember all this, mate, from the podcast.
Of course.
He was going to go to America, but in the time that he was waiting, he went on loan to Barrytown.
Yeah.
You know, complete non-league. And then got chemical burns from diving around on the line markings. I mean, just insane.
We've had some incredible stories, really have. One of the things for me with not just goalkeeping, but actually where goalkeeping and life have so many things in common, I would say, is that goalkeeping, you've always got to be careful that you think it's too easy. That's one of the biggest things I was always told, and Kevin Hitchcock obviously we had on, that was one thing he'd always say to me as a kid was, look, never think it's too easy, because when you think you've cracked it is when a mistake comes. If you can simplify the mindset, going back to the Ben Foster strategy to an extent, if you can simplify the mindset to simply be improve every single day, and just know that some days it's going to go your way, some days it isn't. Luck plays a major factor in goalkeeping. I truly believe that. I think sometimes, you know, we speak about making making big saves at big moments. Now, all you can do is ever have yourself in the best possible state to play a game, the best possible state for every minute of that game. Now, if you do that, you give yourself a better chance. But look, sometimes you can be in an incredible state and you come up against a team who are ruthless, put four past you, you don't make a save, and you end up walking off losing 4-0. But that can happen. But all you can ever do is control the controllables. I know we've used that term several times, but it is so applicable to goalkeeping. All you can do is give yourself the best chance. And it's been brilliant, like you say, some of those examples there of things happening that are completely out of your control. You get a manager that just decides he doesn't like you, or she doesn't like you. You get a goalkeeping coach that you don't quite fit the model of what they see as a goalkeeper. And suddenly, you could be up and off. You could be another team, and you have to figure it out. And each of the stories we've heard, there's not a single goalkeeper that will go through their career without having a major, major setback at some point. And some of the stories are just extraordinary that we've heard. But each time, the goalkeeper or goalkeeper coach has bounced back. They've found another way to find their way through that issue.
I've got one more
go on.
To finish on Danny's question. And this is the fact that despite my defence for goalkeepers, there are still things that I disagree with you on. And I do feel, and I noticed this when we spoke to Jack Butland, and I put something to him about men on the posts, and he wasn't a fan of the question. He kind of batted it off straight away. And you're the same when I put certain things to you. And there's one such example I'm going to bring up.
Go on.
Because it was the semi-final between Chelsea and Spurs in the Carabao Cup. Now, Harry Kane stepped up for a penalty. And I went full Monday Night Football on this, and I froze the frame because there was some punditry at the time by Joe Cole and Robbie Keane. And Robbie Keane was saying that the fact that Kepa did his little shimmy in the middle and then didn't even bother to dive. And he said, you've got to lunge as a keeper. You have to lunge. And you took exception to that. And I agree with that, that if you just lunge every time and it goes down the middle, you're never going to be able to be consistent when saving penalties. I remember you saying it's either left, right or centre as a goalkeeper. But my issue with that particular penalty was that Harry Kane is a great penalty taker. Now, I froze the frame at the point of impact when Harry Kane went to hit his penalty. As his foot connected with the ball, Kepa was still in the air. When he was sort of setting his position, he was still in the air. So by the time he landed back on the ground, and this is still in the air from when he was getting ready to dive, before he's even able to dive, by the time he's back on the ground, the ball is pretty much in the net. So there is no way, by taking that position as Kepa did, that he had any chance of saving that penalty.
I still disagree with you.
Go on.
If you look, when any shot's taken, the goalkeeper is in the air. Now, ideally, as a goalkeeper, you want to time it so that you're landing as the ball's being struck. But you don't want to be set as the ball's being struck. If you're on the floor as the ball's being struck, where do you generate your power? The power's generated from the landing and the exploding. So you should time it so that as the ball's being struck, you're just about to hit the ground. Now, you have got three choices. And in fact, again, time of recording, England have just gained a bronze medal in the whatever it's called.
UEFA Nations
League. There you go. And Pickford obviously saved another penalty. But look, there was a few penalties that Pickford faced where he's waiting and waiting, but the taker's obviously looking for him, and he's ended up once going one way and diving back on himself, and it looks quite soft, but it isn't soft. Similarly, Kepa has expected or guessed it'll go down the middle. That's all that happens. Now, if he'd have just stood up, the commentators might not have said anything, because they might have said, oh, okay, he was thinking he'd go down the middle, but he's gone in the corner. Now, what he's done is he tried to react and still get down there. So in the end, it looks quite soft because it looks like he's not got much yardage with his dive, but the ball's gone in the corner. And you think, well, if you'd have gone that way, you'd have saved it, Kepa. But he didn't. That wasn't his guess. His guess was central, but then he made the decision to dive last minute, which was why it looked how it looked. And that's, for me, where I think if he'd have guessed early on and said, I'm going to go that way, which, by the way, you could argue that Harry Kane normally goes that way. So if you're going to go percentages, then maybe you should have gone that way, Kepa. But he didn't. He decided to stand still, but he made it look worse by actually putting in a dive. That's my opinion.
Okay, so basically, he just thought it was going to go down the middle, and it didn't go down the middle. So it was
that's
just
my opinion. Again, look, and this is, by the way, this is where, you know, as much as I'm very strong in my opinions, I am always open. And this is the kind of thing where I know not all goalkeepers will agree with me. And that's, again, by the way, that's absolutely fine. I know we've had a few nice little debates on Twitter, etc. And please do keep your thoughts coming, because, look, I'm very strong on my opinions and what have you. But of course, look, there is no defined right and wrong. And that's the beauty of goalkeeping as well, that we all see goalkeeping slightly differently. I've got in my mind what I see the model of a goalkeeper being, the perfect goalkeeper in my mind. But I know that's not in alignment with what a lot of other goalkeepers see. They've got a very different idea. You know, if your perfect goalkeeper is a Manuel Neuer, well, that's a very different goalkeeper to a David De Gea or to an Edison. Now, there's no right or wrong. They're all very effective in their own ways. They're all arguably better better suited to different teams. And that's absolutely fine. But that's, again, one of the beauties of goalkeeping.
And it does pay off, by the way, for Kepa, because we've mentioned it already in the pod, but staying down the middle against Eintracht Frankfurt in that semi-final, he saved the penalty and they got to the final. So, okay, maybe I don't know as much as I think. We are nearing the end of our first season, Richard. So we're going to end it in a way that I actually wanted to do, or to end, sorry, most podcasts. And because we get so engrossed in a guest's career, we've never actually had the chance to do this. So I'm going to do it now and we'll see if we can introduce it for the next season. But it's a little quiz on that goalkeeper and his career.
Ah.
So with you sat opposite me now, we are going to do a little quiz. Cue the music. Okay, Richard Lee, these are going to be a few questions on your career. Various things. It can be football, it could be business, it could be absolutely anything. Ooh. So I'm going to see how well you know yourself.
I'm a little bit nervous. Given that I make up things about my career, it turns out. Who knows?
Who knows? So, Richard Lee, you made your professional club debut for Watford on the 4th of March 2003. Who was the opposition goalkeeper on that day?
Oh, well, it was Preston North End. I'm going to go Jonathan Gould.
Correct. In your third game as a pro, Watford beat Derby 2-0. Who scored the goals?
For us?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've got no idea. I made a couple of saves that day, though. I remember that Ravanelli to my right. That was a good save. Oh, I don't know who scored
That's
for us.
Question. Michael Chopra and Neil Ardley.
Oh, I never
You should know that, Richard. You failed to make a single appearance the following campaign. Which two goalkeepers kept you out of the side?
It was because I broke my arm, and the two goalkeepers were Lenny Pidgley and Alec Chamberlain.
Correct. Now, in the annals of internet archiving, there is a blog site under the domain richardleegk.com. What was the tagline for that blog?
Oh, I have got no idea.
From the back of my net.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Richard Lee from the back of my net. There it is, people. He was well aware of the media world well before he joined it. Next one. You made your first Premier League appearance against Manchester United in 2006. Can you name the five-man defence in front of you that day?
I don't know. I can name the two scorers, Sylvester and Giggs.
Hang on a second. You couldn't name the two scorers earlier when it was Michael
against
Chopra
and Neil Ardley. I can't remember our team. That's the point. I couldn't tell you two members of our team.
Okay, so the two goal scorers were?
Sylvester and Giggs.
Right. And any idea of the defenders in front of you?
Absolutely. Oh, Danny Shittu, I remember, because there's a picture of him taking me out. But other than that, I would guess Jay Demerit. I would guess James Chambers. I would guess Chris Powell.
Okay, so not bad, to be fair. Not bad. Although, see, this is another thing. As a fan, as a journalist, you can't believe that players don't remember certain things like that. But, yes, Chris Powell, Jay Demerit, Lloyd Doyley, Danny Shittu and Ashley Young.
Okay.
Jordan Stewart did come off the bench as well. So he went for a five-man defence, no surprises, playing. Was it at Old Trafford?
No, that was at home. We should have won, really.
Okay, now you once went on Dragon's Den in the hope of gaining investment into your hat company, Dr. Cap. What was the investment you asked for and for how much equity?
We asked for $150,000 for 20% equity in our company.
There we go, correct. Now, after finishing your career, you did an interview with My London News, right? You used a two-word phrase to describe your opening period after moving to Brentford. What was it?
Absolute shambles.
Car crash. And lastly, if people are still listening, now this is our 30th episode, right? So that means we've had 29 guests up to now. I want to know how much attention you've been paying in 29 seconds. How many can you name? Go.
Tom Heaton, Chris Kirkland, Franz Hoik, Tony Parks, Ben Foster, Frankie Fielding, Andy Lonergan, Stephen Bywater, Neil Etheridge, might have said him already, David Button, Andy Dibble, Joe Hart, Asmir Begovic, Brad Friedel.
Very good, Richard. Time is up. I'll tell you what, you did a lot better than I thought you would do there. We had, just to recap over them, Chris Kirkland, Andy Dibble, David Button, Eric Steele, Brad Friedel, Joe Hart, Ben Foster, Paul Robinson, Asmir Begovic, Neil Etheridge, Franz Hoik, Lee Grant, Tony Parks, Dave Besson, Alec Chamberlain, Jack Butland, Carly Telford, Andy Marshall, Jimmy Walker, Kevin Hitchcock, Kevin Pilkington, Dean Kiley, Frankie Fielding, Andrew Lonergan, Kelvin Davis, Tom Heaton, David Coles, and the great, wonderful Stephen Bywater.
Indeed, indeed.
So not bad, mate.
Great list, though. Really good list. And, yeah, hopefully, I mean, going into next season, of course, we'll be doing one a week. I guess we could be aiming for another 40 or so, hopefully, next season, all being well.
Let's hope so. Well, we will do a pre-season special at some point. Thank you for listening thus far. That is season one done. We will be back very shortly. And just remember, if you want to get in touch with us, it's very easy to do so. On Twitter at GK Union, via email hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Please don't forget the iTunes reviews. We would love you to send those in. But for now, Rich, it's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
Thank you for listening to the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon and Goalkeepers 365.